were other ways that things were being addressed, saying to the body of Christ, choose life, give your baby life. There are other options besides abortion. Mm-hmm. So this was all just kind of working in my heart as a pastor's wife and as a midwife. And one day, as I was just in a prayer time with the Lord, I just had the idea. I'll say it was a vision, but not a physical vision. It was just a mental thought about the need and the women, and that it was great to say, choose life, but what about the women that did not have anything to help? They didn't have a relationship to support them. They did not have a job. They were losing their home. They were losing their relationship. Why were they single and pregnant, and what was their situation? What were they facing? And so I had the idea to open a home, to just find a place where they could come and they could breathe and they would have an opportunity to take time to pray and to be ministered to find the Lord, to connect spiritually with Jesus, and to be healed. And most of all, or not most of all, but very importantly, of course, to choose life and not have an abortion. So in this quiet time, I got really excited. I jumped up and got in the car and I drove to the church and I went to my husband's office and I said, I have an idea. And he said, okay. And so I told him my idea and he said, I think we can do this.
No resistance.
No resistance. Yeah. It was just amazing.
Yeah.
So the next Wednesday night, I was like a good pastor's wife working in the back with the children. And my husband shared that vision about the home with the congregation and didn't tell me he was going to do that. It was just a brand new idea. But my best friend walked out of the back of the church as I was coming in and she pointed to me and she said, Susan, your Mercy House is going to happen. And when she said that, I knew the Lord had given me the name. And so...
Oh, so you didn't have a name yet.
I didn't have a name.
So she gave me an idea.
She gave me the name. And so we started working on that. The first thing we did was gather a group to pray. And we spent some time praying. In the beginning of, I think it was 1996... The Lord said, this is the year. I want you to get going. So I began just gathering people. We had a community meeting, and about 40 people showed up from the community just interested in helping. And we started fundraising and casting vision. And back then, all we had was a copy machine and snail mail, and that's what we did. We just sent out newsletters, casting vision every month, and people began to give. So I started putting things together, created a board, a nonprofit, just, you know, doing all my due diligence. And by the end of 1997, so it was about a year or so, maybe 10 months, a pastor from Arlington called me and he said, I have a vision to start a maternity home. Would you help me? And I said, yes, I will. And so I just began to tell him, you know, the things that we had done. And he said, so what are you lacking? And I said, well, we don't have a house yet. And he said, well, I have a house. And so my spirit just exploded inside. I tried to keep my cool. And I said, okay, well, what do you have in mind? And he said, I want to talk to my counsel, and we'll get back with you. And so that was the very first house. And we used that house. It was in Arlington at a Baptist church. And we went in and we renovated that. We had a little bit of money to update the house, and we started there. And that was in the beginning of 1998, March 1st.
We opened our
first home then.
Yeah.
So we began to take women in, and we also had been using couples that were offering to house one woman in their personal home. We called them shepherding homes, and so we were working with that as well. So we were beginning to have some good stories and some things, you know, some life changes and some obvious saving some lives through, you know, women having an option other than abortion. And so that's kind of how we got started.
Yeah,
and,
very nice. It sounds like it was easy. I know it must not have been easy, but it sounds like all the pieces were kind of coming into place. Did it seem like, I hate to use the word easy because I know nothing like this is easy, but that the Lord was just kind of putting the pieces together?
It really was a miraculous thing.
Yeah.
You know, I often gave the analogy, I feel like I'm riding a wave. I'm sort of a Southern California girl, and I remember finding that place where you just have to ride the wave and hang on.
You're just not putting up any resistance. You're just letting
the Lord was just moving mightily. Yeah. It was just like a wave.
Yeah, no, I know exactly what you're doing. Yeah, that's awesome. And I was just jotting down some notes, and I'm curious, you know, back in 96 or when this idea first popped into your mind, were there any models of like that you look at and say, I want to do what that person's doing? Or was this something kind of new? I've done interviews before with folks like the Bella House, Loretto House, and these are doing similar work. Mm-hmm. And it's nice because obviously you guys are more Protestant-based, but this is an issue where Protestants and Catholics are in line with each other, and it's mm-hmm. not really a denominational issue. This is about saving lives and healing women and families. So I'm curious, was there a model that you looked at, or were you having to kind of start from scratch?
Well, there were maternity homes. There have always been maternity homes for years. We did not really have a model. I would say probably the closest model would have been Elizabeth Home that was being raised up about the same time in Denton. But there was not one maternity home or place for women to go in Tarrant County. And at that time, we were in Tarrant County. Well, we're still in Tarrant County, but I live in a different county now. But there was not a home in Tarrant County. Mm. And it just was really on my heart that we would have a home. There were pregnancy centers that offered help, but nowhere for the women to go who needed housing. And that was a critical need. It's still a critical need. There are many women who are homeless that are either pregnant or single with children. That's the highest homeless population in the U.S.
Yeah,
that's
and the culture, of course, is saying the air quote easy way out is abortion, right?
Right.
So they think, of course, that's not the easy way out.
No, it's not.
But so what you're doing with Mercy House is giving them a way where people can come together and help them in a time of great distress for many of these women.
Yes.
Well, thank you so much for that background. That's very interesting. Again, Susan Hewlett is the founder of Mercy House. They're located online at mercyhouse.org, and also have in studio with me Stephanie Morgan, who is the executive director. And I want to bring Stephanie into the conversation now that we have the foundation. I know you probably know all that that we just discussed, but Stephanie, tell us about yourself and your background and how long you've served as executive director.
Sure. Sorry. I started with Mercy House a couple of years ago. I actually started as an intern working on my Master's of Social Work. And I've graduated, internships ended, but I found myself still connected with Mercy House. And so I was just used wherever I was needed, basically, working with our previous executive director to help do case management and just to be there. Whatever she needed, I was there. And that's basically, I've got my master's in social work now. And just serving others is where I see my need and my call to do.
Why does this particular issue mean so much to you? Why obviously, you know, you're doing this day in and day out, mm-hmm. and this is your job, so to speak. Why this? Why does it? How does it touch your heart to help the women in need like this?
Just to see, to give them a sense of security and a reason to be here along with their child. I think for me, it touched base because I was a young mother as well. I was fortunate enough to have a very supportive family. And I still had a hard time.
Mm-hmm.
So I think for me, just helping to give these young ladies who have chosen to keep their babies a sense of security, a place to stay. But we're not just a bed for them to stay in. So we offer a lot of different programs for them, including parenting courses. We do social support systems, so we try to get them out in the community and do different things, as well as if they choose to do to further their education. We help with that, along with if they choose to work, then we help them find the skills or gather the skills through different resources to do that as well. Mm-hmm. So I think just giving them some footing, a foundation, and then just showing the love of God to them, because that means a lot. Some don't understand that. And so you get a lot of pushback. But if you continue to support them and show them the love, you just let the love of God shine through. And that's what I really enjoy. I think the most is just giving them the opportunity to build their own relationship with God.
Yeah, amen. If my notes are right, Susan mentioned March 1st of 1998 when the pastor in Arlington called, and that's when the first house was there at the Baptist Church. And I think you had told me before we started the interview that you have a house in Colleyville. So
yes.
Is the Arlington one still up and running? Is it Colleyville? How many houses are there? Or Susan, do you want to mention that?
Yes, I could probably answer that pretty well. That first house we were able to use for 3 years. The pastor let me know that he was going to be leaving that church and that probably the council would want to do a new thing. So we just began to pray, and we found another home, kind of another miraculous story that we opened, that we operated in for about 2 to 3 years. And then we had some slowdown, a little bit of financial challenges, and so we stepped back and kind of rebuilt and tried to build our financial base more effectively. In 2012, we got a pledge from a family in our church who said, we will give you $2,000 a month toward the rental or the purchase of a home. So we bought another home in 2012. No, I'm sorry, we didn't buy it. We rented another home in 2012. That kind of coincided with my husband and my retirement from our church pastorate. So I just put myself 100% into Mercy House in 2012 and just worked every day, 8 hours a day, just really pounding the pavement and building more of a financial and a support base. And so in 2012, we operated there, I believe, 4 years. We had a wonderful man who was our landlord who helped us. But during that time, that two-year time, the initial two-year time, God just really blessed us. We had a huge number of women who came through the house and really had many more stories to tell, and it was very strong. And so at the end of that 4 years, we were able to purchase the home in Colleyville. So it was it's our first permanent purchased home that we were able to sustain.
And that was about 2015, 2016, is that?
2016.
2016, mm-hmm. Okay. And so you've been running this one for about almost 10 years now.
Yes, yes.
And this is owned, it's not not leased.
Yes.
And, okay, that makes sense. Yeah. And Stephanie, how many women are able to be served at a time? How many does the house hold?
We have a capacity of 5 that we can have at any time, up to 5 women.
And what kind, who qualifies, I guess, for the lack of a better word, and how, what kind of, you know, there may be somebody listening right now that would say, gosh, I know somebody who would be mm-hmm. perfect for this. How do you kind of determine whether or not this is a good fit for Mercy House?
We do pre-screening. Mainly we look to see if, the ladies are 18 to 26. That's the main criteria, and don't have a place to go. And then there's some other things once we talk to them as far as no drug use within the last 6 months, we'll say.
Mm-hmm.
And then we also do a criminal background check, but that's, you know, it's kind of base by base. We don't accept any felonies, but we do try to look at each lady individually in their individual situation to see, because we do want everyone in the home to feel safe and for You know, which we're building a community in the home as well.
And how is that? I'm sure there's prayer together, and these women, of course, they probably bond because they're in very similar situations. Yeah. And I think you said beforehand you have an opening or two right now. You could take a woman or two in the house. Is that right?
Yes. So we just recently hired a new house house manager, and so our last resident left around middle of April, and so we actually have 5 beds open right now, and we're currently, and now we can take those young ladies in. We've had some inquire over the last month and a half or so, and unfortunately I wasn't able to bring them in, but we are open right now. We do have 5 beds, and we would love to help anyone that needs help right now. And they can go to our website at mercyhouse.org, and there's an inquiry form that they would fill out, and then once they fill that form out, we call them to connect. Some don't have a phone because of the situation that they're in, but we will try to email as well, and just kind of do that pre-screening with them, and then try to get them into the home as quickly as possible. Yeah, and we do, it's not just this area, so if they live in other areas, we have taken ladies in from other states as well, so we try to get that transportation taken care of for them, and meet them midway to get them into the home.
We are talking about Mercy House. It's located in Colleyville, as we've mentioned, helping single pregnant women navigate their journey, and they're located online at mercyhouse.org. I have the founder of Mercy House, Susan Hewlett, in studio, and also Stephanie Morgan, the executive director. And I know one of the big things, the necessary things, is to raise the money to keep this going. And I know, Susan, you've mentioned about some of the people who have come forward from the church or donors, but either one of you can take this question. But if people feel inspired to help you out or want to help you or learn more, what should they go to the website or call you, or what should they do?
Well, any of those things.
Okay, all the
we
above.
Would love to hear from them. We do have a place where you can give online on our website, but we also would love to get any calls, anyone interested in helping in volunteering. We do depend on our volunteers a lot for some of the day-to-day things, and so now that we will be having a full house again, we really need our volunteers to step up, and we will need to so we're very open to that, especially if there was some sort of special skill, for example, lactation consultant, counseling, coaching. Those are things that are really helpful. But it can also just be things like coming in and cooking, making some cookies, spending time. We have one volunteer position called the Cuddle Buddy, and that's just a woman who comes in and just helps out with the baby and the mom, and just is kind of a friend there. So we do want to also keep an eye on our women afterwards for their postpartum, just to be sure that they're not struggling and they're doing well. So having that Cuddle Buddy person to kind of come in and take a look and say, yeah, everything seems good, or, you know, just to help us with support. So we love that. And there are lots and lots of ways to serve. In fact, on the website, it has a little drop-down box, how to help. You can go there and see what all the volunteer opportunities are. So those are ways that people can serve. Yes, absolutely, on the financial. We do a real deep dive into a life. We have the women for a year. So we may not have huge numbers like a scattershoot where there's like it's a mile wide and an inch deep. Ours is more like a mile deep and an inch wide. So we these women, we feel like the Lord has sent them. We ask Him to send us the women that He wants us to help. And then we give them a year, so they have their prenatal period, they have their birth, and then afterward. So they have a year to catch their breath and get the skills they need and the healing that they need. So we appreciate help with all of the aspects of that, from the very first day until we say goodbye to them, and hopefully they leave with a job and a car.
And I know you've been involved for well over 25 years, and Stephanie, a couple of years in your part, but I'm sure it's very gratifying to see these women's, you know, they come in as one person, they really leave as another, and yes. hopefully with a little baby in their arms.
Yes.
It's very gratifying.
Very, very beautiful. Yeah. Then do you keep in touch with them, even if they leave after a year? You yeah. still, they come back, and they remain a part of your life, mm-hmm. I'm sure, as well, right?
Yes, I do have some. You know, I've been there, like I said, just over a couple of years, but I have some that will, a few that will send me a picture of the baby just to, so that I can see how that baby is doing and growing and just, and then hear about them as well as far as, it's really gratifying to hear that they're in a better place than yeah. when they came in. And that's just not, as far as like physically and mentally, but spiritually as well, because mm-hmm. so many connect with something they've never known when they come in. We do Bible study as well as prayer with the ladies throughout the week, as well as other things that connects us with a lot of the local churches as well. They've participated in Baby and Me courses. They've participated in prenatal courses and things like that as well, and parenting courses. So,
yeah, that's... It answers that objection that sometimes people say, pro-life people only care about the baby when it's in the mm-hmm. womb, and they don't care about the mother after the baby's born. And we're mm-hmm. like, oh, actually, have you heard of Mercy House? Have you heard of Ella House, Lourda House? Well, thanks to you both. We're out of time. I got about 30 seconds. Is there anything that I didn't ask that you want to throw out real quickly, or did we cover it all?
Susan? I just wanted to share that our very first resident delivered her baby on my birthday, May 27th, 1998. And she has now raised her daughter. She is a successful businesswoman. She has served on the board of Mercy House and continues to tell her story. And it's just profound to have a relationship that long with the first woman who yeah. ever went through our program. And I'm very grateful. We have many stories like that.
Oh, that's beautiful. That's a great one. For it to land on your birthday, what a blessing that is.
Yeah.
Susan Hewlett, thank you very much. Founder of Mercy House, along with Stephanie Morgan, the current executive director. All the information can be found at mercyhouse.org. You can also email stephaniemorgan@mercyhouse.org if you have any information. And if you'd like to reach out to Stephanie, thank you to both of you for coming in. It's a pleasure to meet you, and may God continue to bless your work with Mercy House. Thanks also to Cecil Anderson for running the board, and thank you for listening. This has been the Interview of the Week here on the Guadalupe Radio Network. God bless you.
The Diocese of Fort Worth joyfully announces the permanent diaconate ordination of 7 candidates. All listeners are cordially invited to attend the ordination mass, which takes place on Saturday, August 9th at 10 a.m. at St. Mark Parish in Argyle. Come together and pray these men will feel the unending flow of grace from our merciful God as they serve in the Diocese of Fort Worth. Support the candidates during this time of great joy and celebration by attending their permanent diaconate ordination.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to this edition of the KTH and the KCPP Interview of the Week here on the Guadalupe Radio Network. We are broadcasting both on 910 AM in Dallas and Plano and Frisco, and also our new station, 1140 AM, KCPP out in Fort Worth and Cleburne and Granbury and all those good areas. Weatherford, I was out there recently as well. So regardless of where you're listening or what station, we welcome you to this program. We do 2 of these a week, and it's a really good opportunity to just kind of get you up to date on people that are coming through town, events that are going on, news in the Dallas and the Fort Worth Diocese. And I have a visitor who came in from Houston, somebody that I've known for a number of years and have great admiration for what he has built along with a great team. And his name is Ken Zammit, and he is founder and president of Fullness of Truth. You can put a .org at the end of that and get to their website, fullnessoftruth.org. And if you go to that website, you'll see that Fullness of Truth is dedicated to promoting Catholic doctrine and the new evangelization, bringing sacred scripture and sacred tradition to life. And I'm just going to read the mission statement really quickly. By deepening and enriching the faith of thousands of Catholics and non-Catholics each year through Catholic conferences, parish events, a robust social media outreach, and our book and gift store, Fullness of Truth fulfills its mission to promote and share the inestimable gift and irrefutable truth of the Roman Catholic faith with all through sincere charity and reverence. In the spirit of 1 Peter 3:15, we are delighted to serve the church in the work of the new evangelization. So, Ken Zammit, welcome. Thanks for being here.
Well, great. Thank you, Dave. It's always great to be back with you.
And I think in all these years, this is the first time, am I right, that you've stopped by our studio and actually sat down? I think I interviewed you a time or two on the phone, but I think the first time that you've actually been in our studio.
This is the first time. Yes, we've done it live at the conferences and on the phone.
Yeah, so we are broadcasting. We're actually recording this at the end of May. It's playing in June. What brought you to town?
Well, I'm just making my usual rounds through the towns and the cities that we will be holding conferences in the future, and just meeting with key individuals and just preparing, especially for our Dallas-Fort Worth event that will be the first weekend in December.
Mm-hmm. And you are mostly a Texas apostolate. I know you do an event in Louisiana, or you have done that, but this is what, bring us back. I think the first one ever was San Antonio or Houston or what? What are the origins?
Well, we were founded in 2001, and we are always have been headquartered in Houston, where I live. And since 2001, we have branched out and have tried to serve as many cities and dioceses as possible. We're going on 25 years now. Since 2001, and we have managed to serve in 13 different dioceses in Texas and Louisiana, and in two states, of course, and somewhere between 135, 150 conferences later, here we are. So mm-hmm. We're still going strong, God willing, and it's been a great ride.
Yeah, and unlike, you know, a lot of groups like, you know, I'm just thinking of us, you know, we run radio stations and then we happen to have events, or a group like Catholic Charities, they do their thing, but they just happen to have an event. Y'all are unique is that the events are what you do. The events aren't like something extra to make some money to carry on your mission. The mission is events, and that's unique, isn't it?
It is. Yes. I think we're fairly unique across, you know, the United States, maybe worldwide, actually. You know, I kind of call ourselves a bunch of, you know, sort of crazy Catholics out of Houston that will gather, you know, load up the cars, load up the U-Haul and travel, you know, to other cities and do what we can to evangelize fellow Catholics or anybody that will sit down and listen, you know, to the gift and treasure we have to share. I think there's others that maybe do something similar at a, you know, parish-based or more of a narrow focus. We're a basic catechetical, you know, evangelization ministry for average Catholics, if you will.
Yeah. I mean,
and that's what we've been doing for 25 years.
Was, when you started this in 2001, was there, because since it is so unique, there really wasn't a model to say, I think we'll be like that group, right? I mean, you had to kind of develop something brand new. Am I right?
Well, I like to think it was original, but really, I think I lifted the idea mostly from St. Joseph's Communications at that time.
Okay.
You know, they were writing the Scott Hahn tape, conversion tape wave back then. But they were mostly focused in Southern California. They were doing, I think, or getting close to launching their Midwest event that's still going strong in Wichita. But I thought, well, why not in Texas? You know, I've been blessed with a good job and I could invest it in souls. And so was called to do so. So I really kind of got the idea of a multi-day, multi-speaker event from St. Joseph's Communications, like their Long Beach and Anaheim conferences. Mm-hmm.
I remember back in the, I came running back into the, you know, I'm a cradle Catholic, but I really got charged up in my faith back in the late 90s. And this was what the age of Scott Hahn and some of these other great apologists. But that was the age of like apologist Carl Keating and these kind of guys, Tim Staples, who, you know, who's still around, of course, now. But has the appetite changed for what people are looking for? It seems like lately there's been a lot of, you know, demonology and exorcism. Are there waves that you have detected in these last 25 years of what people are interested in, or how would you describe that?
I think it's a mix of the waves that have gone, you know, through me personally and where I was, and also a discernment of what people wanted or needed to hear. So for example, as you've mentioned early on, I think our conferences took on a heavy apologetics sort of feel.
Mm-hmm.
And there's all these, you know, convert clergymen coming into the church. And I was a revert myself. So I was, you know, very impacted by the credibility of their story of not wanting to become Catholic, but the truth convicted them that they must be, you know, faithful to our Lord. So I think bringing those through in the Tim Staples, and at least, you know, he was an example of that, Scott Hahn, you know, Jeff Cavins, on down the road of those that went to, you know, on Marcus Grodi's show, you know, Coming Home Network, Marcus himself as well. I think that's where we kind of started, because that's where I was and was so important to me in my reversion to the faith, the reasons for the faith, the whys behind the what we believe, you know, what we, and that's what I lacked as a kid growing up. I kind of knew what we believe, but I didn't know why. And when I got old enough, I figured the whys, nobody seemed to tell me the whys. So I kind of made the false assumption that there was no whys.
Yeah.
But when I discovered the whys, and you mentioned Carl Keating, because it was really his book that started me, you know, really propelled me on this cascade, reading his book, Fundamentalism and Catholicism, or Catholicism and Fundamentalism, I can't remember the order. That book changed everything for me. And it just showed me so many of the whys behind what, you know, we as Catholics believe, you know, maybe peculiarly amongst the different, you know, Catholic groups or Christian groups. So apologetics was early on the focus. It seemed to be a big desire to have more and more of that around. And so that's what we did. I think it then went through a phase of, okay, we've done that. Let's start bringing in why the Mass, you know, Marian conferences, the Eucharist, very, you know, very central in most everything we do and have done. So teaching Catholics about, again, the treasure they have and why we worship the way we do, and not to see it as an obligation, but as a, you know, an opportunity to, you know, enthusiastically, I can't wait to get the Mass. You know, that's what we wanted to help support. I think with the Eucharistic Congress, we saw a lot of that as well coming around. Every parish or diocese that we've served seemed like they wanted to have more of that. You know, why the Mass? Why the Eucharist? Especially with COVID and people not, you know, seemingly coming back to Mass, that was very important. Spiritual warfare, you mentioned, yes, that is a bit of a hot topic right now. We try to address that, but not in any kind of sensational way. We don't want everything to be, you know, focused on extraordinary, you know, cases of spiritual warfare or demonology, but really everyday spiritual warfare of resisting sin and temptation. Right now, I'll try and give you the long answer to your short question. Our focus has been, I think, more on prayer and spirituality lately. It's occurred to us, and I think is rightly pointed out, that all truth and even the sacraments of the Mass itself really point us to ultimately our relationship and union with God. And of course, the vehicle for that is in prayer and seeking God in prayer. And so once the truth of our faith really kind of filters down intellectually and we are now convinced of the truth of our faith, that really needs to kind of percolate down to the heart and the heart of the faith and the heart of what this is all about. And that is, again, reaching heaven, living with our Lord and our God eternally, but union with Him. And that can only be done through prayer.
Yeah. Ken Zammit is my guest. He is founder and president of Fullness of Truth Ministries. They put on Catholic conferences and events across the state of Texas, Louisiana. Their website, fullnessoftruth.org, fullnessoftruth.org. In fact, they've got several events still coming up this year with the next one is going to be, I believe, and correct me if I'm wrong, at least the one that I have off the website, August 15th through 17th. It's called For Heaven's Sake, Staying on the Path with the Science of Sainthood, 19th Annual Catholic Family Summer Conference at the Hyatt Regency Hill Country Resort and Spa in San Antonio. This is your biggest conference every year, isn't it? I mean, this is the San Antonio. I mean, they come out. I mean, what is it about San Antonio? This is a great venue. And you get a couple thousand people at this event every year, don't you?
We do. We do. I think it's just been consistently the one conference year in and year out that everybody looks forward to. It's a summer event, a family event. You mentioned the venue, the destination. We certainly don't have to twist arms to get people to come there. Everybody has a wonderful retreat experience. And we, like the attendees, just kind of float out of there when we're done and just, you know, praise God for, again, the fullness of truth of our faith. And so that is our next big conference. But, I mean, you skipped one. Actually, we do have one this weekend.
By the time this runs, it's going to be over.
Oh, yeah. Okay. I'm sorry. Gotcha.
Wait, how did that last one go? What was that? Was that Houston?
Well, I mean, it's coming up this weekend.
So, yeah, okay.
So San Antonio, and then after that, we will be in Round Rock, in the Austin Diocese at the Kalahari Resort, trying to recreate that San Antonio destination experience.
Great venue.
So we're building that. It is a wonderful event, and that will be focused on the Catholic culture revival. So kind of bringing in more the cultural, you know, battles of our day, you know, culture war kind of stuff, but also bringing in a lot about sacred tradition, sacred art, sacred music, sacred architecture, you know, the Catholic culture revival and supporting that. So, and then in Dallas will be our final one of the year after our Louisiana event in November, the Dallas conference at the Allen Marriott, December 5th through 7th. And we're really excited about that. It's going to be another Marian conference. We're going to call it, you know, the Hail Immaculata, Mother Mary and Heaven's Plan for Spiritual Warfare. And joining us will be like Jeff Cavins and Father Donald Calloway, a Monsignor Eugene Morris out of St. Louis, and Gabriel Castillo, among others. So
that's the Allen one, right?
That's the Allen.
Oh, yeah, that's great. Have you found, you know, I was very blessed to MC the original Round Rock one a couple years ago, and it was Father Chad Ripperger. Uh-huh. And you had, it just seemed like the perfect storm of a really good topic. You had a really well-known exorcist priest, and you had some other demonologists and lay leaders, and it just all kind of came together. And I know that's not the only time that's happened. It's probably happened many times when it just, everything seems to be the great topic, the great speakers. Is it formulaic, or what makes a good conference? You mentioned the venue. I mean, the Kalahari, the Hyatt Regency down in San Antonio. What have you found in all these years makes for the best conference?
Well, I think we mentioned and discussed San Antonio. I think the destination, hate to say it, but it does matter. You know, we're human beings, we're families, we're, you know, mom and dad, you know, can we devote ourselves to learn our faith deeper over a weekend? What kind of helps tip the scales? Having a fun, you know, place to go. Fun is a factor in conference promotion. So I think destination has a lot to do with it. Then from there, it's speakers, maybe, you know, household names, helps bring people out and the theme. And then depending on where you are in Texas, Louisiana, maybe particular conflicts that you may be avoiding or maybe running up against. I made the mistake of having a conference in Louisiana on the weekend of an Alabama LSU game. And, you know, I learned a hard lesson. I thought it was an away game, but, you know, I've learned you don't go in Louisiana and try to hold a conference during the fall unless it's either a bye week or it's a,
or do it on a Wednesday.
Or a lightweight opponent, maybe early in the year or stuff, but you just don't go against it. And so you got to be wise.
But you got to plan so far ahead. I mean, you can't plan these out 2 months. I mean, you're probably right now planning,
I'm working on 26 and
27 right now. And then you got to have the topic that's right, the speakers that's right. How do you find, I mean, there's obviously the names that people know, you know, you got the Father Mike Schmitz and the Dr. Scott Hans and the well-known Father Calloway you mentioned. Mm-hmm. Matthew Leonard, I think, is going to be at the San Antonio one, right?
Yes.
How do you scope out the new talent or the guys, maybe the up-and-comers? I mean, do you have a scouting team or are you looking on YouTube videos or where do you find the people that will be your speakers in the years to come?
Suggestions come from all over. They come from surveys of our attendees. There's just tons of them unsolicited. You know, I've got several today. I mean, at breakfast.
Oh, is that right?
I got four or five, you know. But I would say between myself, just kind of keeping the antennae up, you know, looking for that next up and coming speaker, trying to mix in that maybe not so well known with the well known. Is a good balance. But my team and our team at Fullness of Truth, these are people that spend a lot more time listening to podcasts and on the internet than me in my 60s, you know, tend to be. So I get a lot of intel from them as well. So from there, it's a prayerful discernment and trying to find the speakers, their different wheelhouses they have and trying to put them together into a great thematic coverage of the topic, you know, the subject matter for that particular weekend.
And tell me a little bit more about the San Antonio event. It's not, I mean, well, June, July, August. I mean, just a couple of months away from this one now. Right. For Heaven's Sake, Staying on the Path with the Science of Sainthood, 19th Annual Catholic Family Summer Conference, Hyatt Regency Hill Country Resort and Spa in San Antonio. I mentioned Matthew Leonard, and he actually surprised me. I saw him speak last year at a conference, and I think he was even filling in for somebody at the, he was speaking at the benefit dinner.
Right. Yeah.
And I think he was filling in for a speaker that wasn't able to make it.
Correct.
He was just, I mean, he brought down the house. He was outstanding, his testimony. So he's going to be there. Who else will be in San Antonio?
Well, we'll have his close friend and, you know, a buddy, basically Dr. Brant Petrie. Matthew and Brant go back to their days at the St. Paul Center with Scott Hahn and have a very close relationship. And their work trajectory is taken on the same kind of path as well. And that is, again, the idea of prayer and the interior life. If you look at Dr. Petrie's latest books and Matthew's beautiful Science of Sainthood website, if people have not looked at that, they really need to check out the Science of Sainthood. And so that's why in the subtitle I mentioned the Science of Sainthood. I think it's catchy, and I think it kind of tells the story that we can learn from the saints, especially the Carmelite saints, on prayer and especially deeper forms of prayer. You know, contemplative prayer and whatnot. So we can learn from them. And this conference will be focused on that interior life. And that's what they love to speak on. And again, really is that, you know, probably the most important topic we're going to cover.
FullnessOfTruth.org is the website. FullnessOfTruth.org is the website again. August 15th through 17th. I'm going to be the MC for that event. I'm very excited about that.
Yeah, we're excited.
I love MCing these events. It's just I walk away from these on a Sunday feeling a spiritual high. Like I don't want to leave. You know, that's the feeling I always, every single time. I think I've MC'd five of these, and it's like you know. You want to just stay. I mean, because you always have adoration. You've got reconciliation. You've got mass. You know, Dave and Lauren Moore typically have been the music, and of course they're just outstanding. What about in, let's see, we got about 4 minutes remaining, the third annual Round Rock Catholic Family Fall Conference and Benefit Dinner. What can you tell us about that one? That's going to be in the fall, right?
Yeah, that'll be first week in October, October 3rd and 5th at the Kalahari Resort. And again, this is that the Catholic Culture Revival Conference, restoring the good, true, and beautiful to a searching world. And it's still taking development right now. I've got a few folks, I think, lined up that I have to kind of get vetted in the usual way before we go public with it. But what we have confirmed is Dr. Ted Shree and Dr. Mary Healy and an old friend of mine, Eric Jenis, that wonderful Catholic concert pianist, coming in. Again, I mentioned, you know, part of that beauty and is, you know, sacred music. And Eric has just done a wonderful job with that, and you know how music touches our souls.
Mm-hmm.
So that will be the focus there. Giancarlo Bernini will bring his
a magic,
his Catholic form of illusions.
Yeah,
and cool. He kind of teaches catechetically while performing illusions as well, and he's spectacular. So we'll have some others to join in on that, along with Dave and Lauren Moore, again, and our beautiful masses that we always offer.
Is there a speaker that you've never had that you would love to have? Is there anybody that comes to your mind that, like, one person is like, gosh, I wish...
Just one?
Yeah. Or you can name a couple if you want. Yeah. Who's a dream conference, if you could put it together?
Well, I think I've had... have the speakers that I think, for me, like you mentioned Matthew Leonard, for me, pound for pound, what have you, I mean, Matthew just brings it every time. He is so talented, so articulate. You know, his buddy Bran as well. I mean, they're funny. They're just have a way of crystallizing what could be complex or deep, like prayer, and putting it in simple terms that we can all kind of grasp the first time through and practically make a change. But I think if I had to guess or had to choose someone I'd like to have from a promoter standpoint, it'd be Father Mike Schmidt or you know, Bishop Robert Barron. I've never had either one of them, and I know they would make my job easier of getting souls in the seats to know, hear the meat of the whole conference in general.
Yeah, they definitely would draw people. Yeah. Well, thanks a lot, Ken. It's great talking to you. I got I love what you do, and you guys do it so well, and I've seen it from the inside and the outside. I've been an attendee a number of times. Really over a 20-year period. I remember going to one in Arlington many, many, many years ago. And then to be able to go inside and be the MC at the event, I see how, you know, the sausage is made, so to speak. And it's a really smooth running organization. And I've always walked out of there saying that. So thanks for what you do. And thanks for the souls you're teaching and the people that you're educating. I just invite everybody to go to this website, fullnessoftruth.org, and check out their upcoming events, August 15th through 17th in San Antonio. And Round Rock is going to be...
Thanks for listening to KATH 910 AM Frisco, Dallas, Fort Worth on the Guadalupe Radio Network in North Texas. Catholic radio for your soul. Heard also at grnonline.com and on your smartphone.